This morning we meet to receive a briefing by Sarga on the proposed review of the Organized Local Government Act on the question of the full-time counselor induction program and revenue enhancement strategies. Councillor Johnson, go ahead, sir.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning to yourself and members, honourable members of the Portfolio Committee. First of all, I would like to apologise on behalf of the Chairperson of SALGA, Thomas Masondo, who originally diarised this meeting for the 14th, and then it was moved. Unfortunately, he could not make it and requested me to attend on his behalf.
I accept that apology with a pinch of salt. We haven't seen Comrade Ambi for a long time. So, quite frankly, it's nice to have apology, but I'm not impressed. I'm afraid I want to say that.
Okay. Thank you, Chair. I will convey the message to the Chair.
Absolutely, yeah.
Members, Chairperson and members of the committee, the presentation will be done by the CEO of SALGA. The outline of the presentation is basically to attend to the matters given through to us, the context for the organized local government review process, the legislative review process, the emerging proposals from that, and in particular view as a member of the political steering committee of organizing the SALGA conference, these matters become key to be discussed during the governance commissions. The summary of previous decisions taken by either SALGA members' assembly meetings or national conferences, and also to our proposals to affirm SALGA as a unitary structure. Insofar as full-time leadership at SALGA level, that requires both legislative review processes not only at OLGA level, but also at the constitutional level. We have started with the counselor induction program. Trainers workshops were held between the 13th and the 15th of June, and then we will also touch on matters affecting SALGA's financial sustainability. So with these few words, I will hand over to the CEO of SALGA.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson, and good morning to all the members of the committee. And my colleague from COCTA. As per our last engagement, Chairperson, in April, you did make a promise that we will have to come back, perhaps engage more in detail on the stage governance arrangements for SALGA going forward, and what are the necessary legislative tools that should enable that to take effect. Two related issues in particular are around what was envisaged to be the key role of organized local government as articulated in the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa. In Section 153, it makes provision for the establishment of a national organization of all municipalities, and that national legislation must give effect to this establishment. So we then have what we call organized local government, and we'll be making specific inputs around that. The second related issue is around the role of organized local government in representing the interests of local government as a sector in the entire IGR architecture. So we are also making specific proposals on that. We will also take the committee through Chairperson, the Councillor Induction Program, what is planned, how will it be rolled out, and what are the salient features of this program vis-a-vis the program that we had earlier on in the last phase of local government. The last related issue is the revenue enhancement. Specifically, we are making an argument for a new funding model for this organization, in particular the IGR mandated tasks that must be performed by this organization. In short, Chairperson, these are some of the areas that we will be talking about: the context for the review, the emerging proposals, summary of the previous decisions, proposals for discussion, the CIP and the revenue enhancement process. In short, Chairperson. Thanks,
when you use acronym, you must use it at all.
Okay.
We don't let me help. I suspect all the members are wondering, by the way, why the hell is CIP? What are these things?
Okay.
They're not only a matter of practice, it helps communication.
Okay.
Or counselor induction from CIP.
My apologies, Chief.
I
outlined Councillor Induction Program.
That's okay.
Thank you very much, Chief.
Yeah. Sorry, let me make this point.
Okay.
The DPSA has claimed that so we want you to take up this thing that you must communicate to us. Your commentaries on elections, on this and so on. You didn't provide for us properly in some instances. There are instances where you completely ignore that. So those who are listening to you speak this, who may not be reading, must wonder what is the CIP. I'm just glad you can get the point. It's a matter of principle. Generally, we are accused of not being sensitive to the interests of people with disabilities who may be listening, who can see, and so on. So just as a matter of regular practice, let's make it a habit that we always spell it out, even if we like the sound of an acronym. Let's spell it out, even as we go ahead. Thank you very much.
Point taken, Chairperson. Thank you.
Yes.
So I was saying, in order for organized local government to effectively fulfill its mandate to its members in legislative and IGR processes, it is necessary for organized local government to act as a collective. That is one of the primary arrangements for an organized formation of local government, that for it to fulfill its mandate, it has to act at all times as a collective in order to position local government sector favorable in our own cooperative governance model. The Organized Local Government Act that was promulgated in 1997 puts in place a process for nomination of the SALGA delegation to NCOP, National Council of Provinces, via provincial associations, and a process for nomination of members to the Finance and Fiscal Commission. These are the two specific provisions that currently exist in the Organized Local Government Act. The Intergovernmental Relations Framework Act also makes provision for SALGA's participation and membership on the Presidential Coordinating Council, the Ministerial MEC's fora, and Provincial Intergovernmental Relations Forum. In addition, SALGA participates in the Budget Forum and numerous other committees. So all of these intergovernmental relations forum imposes a participatory obligation for SALGA, a representative obligation for SALGA to act in the best interest of its own members. So all of these therefore require envisage capacity to exist at SALGA to execute all of these engagement in a much more measured way. To optimize local government's participation in key national and provincial structures, the following proposals are emerging. And Chairperson, why are these proposals emerging? We have had, at least since the establishment of SALGA in 1996, at least almost 14 years now of organized local government formation, and at least 13 years since the advent of Organized Local Government Act. So as the system of local government evolved, so does the emergence of numerous structures and forums that makes it compulsory for organized local government to participate in these structures. So we have assessed quite a lot of the areas that through the evolution of SALGA have also presented a number of challenges to the organization. One of those is the structuring of Organized Local Government Act, where it makes provision, one, for SALGA as a national body to be recognized as a body that represents the majority of provincial associations. And through that engagement, the membership of local government in terms of municipalities is direct membership in terms of the national association. So municipalities join SALGA and become members of SALGA as a national organization. So out of 283 and now 278 municipalities, they belong directly to SALGA. So we've got this particular area that we think that over the last 10 years, with the experiences that we had in terms of the imperative of organized local government acting at all times as a unitary organization and as acting as a collective, there is a need for Organized Local Government Act to be amended so as to recognize the unitary nature of SALGA as one association of all municipalities. The second element relates to the number of structures that local government has to serve and SALGA has to represent local government, and the need therefore to ensure that there is a capacity within SALGA to be able to execute this work in a much more direct way. At the moment, Chairperson, with the number of structures we have and the kind of arrangement we have in local government, the leadership of SALGA primarily serves at municipalities. They have a primary responsibility to lead their own municipalities, and the unintended consequence of that has always been that SALGA becomes secondary in the focus and also the execution of work that by its own nature has got a direct impact on the sector across the board. And in a number of instances, some of the challenges that we have experienced over the last 12 years is that as a result of those competing demands placed on local government leadership serving at SALGA, the agenda of organized local government inadvertently takes a secondary focus, in the sense that it's either you are likely to have inconsistent attendance, inconsistent participation, inconsistent representation, because you would have to primarily check which member is available, and sometimes you would have to secure that member on the day of the event, and that also undermines the briefing, the envisaged lobbying required around positions before you actually appear in such IGR structures. So we think that there is value in the organization to have full-time leadership to be able to represent local government right across at instant moment in the IGR system, nationally, provincially, in NCOP, and various committees of parliament where organized local government is required. There is also a need for visibility in terms of the number of issues that are currently unfolding in local government, where there's a need for visible leadership of local government itself in dealing with the day-to-day challenges that municipalities are facing. This matter, Chairperson, has been canvassed quite a lot within the governance structures of organized local government, starting in 2009 in the highest decision-making body of SALGA, held in the Eastern Cape. And in that process, a number of proposals put forward were engaged, and in that engagement at provincial level, the National Members Assembly mandated the committee that was tasked to drive this to make inputs on the following recommendations: the affirmation of SALGA as unitary structure, organize local government to reflect that unitary structure, and also canvass the idea of full-time leadership at both national and provincial level. There has also been a need that was identified in 2009 in terms of the acknowledgement to retain expertise and experience of councillors in local government for the purpose of continuity. And also, the National Member Assembly directed the organization to conduct a study on how best to create a pool of experienced councillors for deployment to assist local government as well as organize local government in dealing with the practical day-to-day challenges of governance at municipalities and institutional challenges in general, so that the responsiveness of the sector itself is spearheaded by organized local government. In 2010, the National Members Assembly again in the Northern Cape, held in the Northern Cape, noted a proposal on the review of organized local government for final resolution at the 2011 National Conference of SALGA. The Conference of SALGA is planned for September 2011 in KwaZulu-Natal, and some of the key proposals that will serve before the governance structure of SALGA will be this proposal on the affirmation of SALGA as a unitary structure, envisaging that will be the attendant consequences of the required amendments in the Organized Local Government Act. And the second issue, the associated implication will be that when it comes to the affirmation of the unitary structure, there would also be a need for SALGA NCOP delegates to also be nominated at a national level. We currently have 10 part-time delegates to the NCOP. So thus, the Section 2.1 of the Organized Local Government Act should be amended to read that the national body to be the representative body of the majority of municipalities. This proposal only affects the recognition requirements of the national association. It does not affect the status of provincial association, because as we look at the broad trust of the local government association model in South Africa, there is also provincial associations. So they will continue to exist and represent the majority of municipalities in their respective provinces for purposes of provincial engagement, so that it is aligned to the Intergovernmental Relations Act. That responds to national as well as provincial IGR imperatives. The second related item is the one of full-time political leadership. As outlined, SALGA is playing a crucial role in the intergovernmental arena on behalf of local government. So we're saying in order for this to be played effectively, there's a need for adequate resourcing, both human and financial, so that the voice of local government can be strengthened within the national and provincial spheres of government. We are proposing, Chairperson, that at least 10 full-time councillors to represent local government sphere in all IGR structures where its participation is required and to advance the local government agenda will be a critical lever if SALGA is to be effective as a representative body of local government. And the associated implication of that could be that an amendment in the Municipal Structures Act, an amendment in the Organized Local Government Act, to make sure that we are able to accommodate this determination in terms of the full-time representation. This does not mean that these will be the only councillors that serve in SALGA structures, but at least he would have a dedicated capacity to discharge these responsibilities instantly, availability, participation, and carry through mandates in terms of lobbying and through all formations of IGR. We think that there is a merit in terms of ensuring that the full-time leadership will be continuously engaged and also be able to visit a number of municipalities where there's troubleshooting requirements on many of those issues and responding to day-to-day national IGR imperatives. At the moment, without this arrangement, Chairperson, organized local government feels that it will continue to struggle to represent local government, at least adequately or at best effectively. We are also making a case for the deployment of experienced political leadership from municipalities on a full-time basis in order that SALGA may play its rightful role in the IGR system. So the form of full-time members could be that of a National Working Committee who would be responsible for the day-to-day leadership of the organization in between National Executive Committee meetings. It will convene monthly and represent SALGA in all IGR forums and engagement, including Parliament and its committees. And as I've indicated already, this proposal may require legislative amendments to enable the nomination of 10 councillors to serve as full-time for organized local government. So that's basically the key areas of engagement we are proposing around the remodeling of the governance arrangements for SALGA and the envisaged need for full-time IGR capacity strength for the organization to engage on these matters. The second related aspect of this presentation, Chairperson, relates to the counselor induction program. This particular program, Chairperson, is aimed at ensuring that the newly elected councillors are capacitated with a general understanding of their leadership role, legislation that guides the sector, key municipal processes, developmental local government, and service delivery. As we now have more than 10,055 councillors representing all the communities in 278 municipalities, we now have a task as organized local government to ensure that we prepare this new leadership for the new role that they will be faced with in leading municipalities over the next 5 years. We also prepare this within the context of new councillors that have joined the sector with a turnover also of more than 50%. So we have prepared a structure to prepare this process in terms of a committee. And the importance of this particular program, the councillor induction program, is that it seeks to provide councillors with the essential information to orientate them to their new role. It's also to ensure that as a second objective, to prepare councillors and ensure that they are familiar with the complexities of their role and to set a positive tone for their term in office. So essentially, the purpose of the councillor induction program is to orientate councillors towards a common understanding of the task ahead, provide information and updates on legislative roles and responsibilities, provide insight on the policies and procedures, and also to create a realistic impression of what local government is all about and what it is tasked to do. To also prepare the incumbent councillors with tools necessary to perform their function effectively. This is the context within which we are preparing the new councillors. As we all know, that the country has quite experienced a lot of community protest. We have also made gains in terms of providing services to our people, but significant challenges, not least capacity, continue to confront local government. national government in 2009 committed to doing things differently and immediately introduced the local government turnaround strategy. And also, since 2009, cabinet adopted the outcomes-based approach, of which the delivery agreement of outcome 9 is aimed, amongst other things, at ensuring a more effective, efficient and accountable local government system. So as councillors are the face of government to the people, and in that context must be equipped to balance the needs of communities within the state's limitation. Yet the 2011 elections saw a number of mayors reach the end of their two-term limit and also a turnover of more than 50% of new councillors. So thus, in that process, vastly experienced councillors were also lost to the system. There is therefore a critical need to develop the capacity of new councillors to tackle the service delivery and development challenges facing local government. Who is the target audience and the content of this program? All elected councillors, Chairperson, will go through the induction. We have a total of 9,088 councillors that are expected to participate. The content of the CIP Councillor Induction Program includes the national context of local government, the systems and structures of local government, regulatory policies and legal framework guiding local government, the functions of key municipal structures, the integrated development planning process, municipal finance and economic development, performance management, public participation, the roles and responsibilities of councillors, and cooperative governance. So all of these areas, Chairperson, we believe that they form the overall view of what local government is all about, and secondly, how it relates within the IGR system, and the emphasis on the need for public participation and the roles and responsibilities of councillors in that process. International protocol procedures would also be included in terms of ensuring a coherent understanding of what our international relations obligations are as a country and how we expect local government to engage in that front. We have, in this new program, Chairperson, also considered the need to train a fair balance of councillors that have left the system and also municipal officials. And that is informed primarily by the need to make sure that we do not overly academize the training engagement. We must have a flavor of practical dimension of people who have played this role. A speaker can be able to stand and articulate what are the realities of playing that role vis-a-vis the role of other office bearers in the municipality and how it has been over the 10 years or 5 years and so on. So there's a 50-50 ratio of councillors and senior officials that we have taken through the training to be immediately available as a capacity to run this councillor capacity building program. We have identified about 172 trainers that have been trained as recent as last week between the 13th and 15th of June 2011. And we will implement this program nationally through the provincial structures of SALGA. So we are also planning a national launch of this program on the 23rd of June in Johannesburg, wherein we have invited the key leadership of our government to participate in this national launch. And included in that, Chairperson, is the Portfolio Committee on Cooperative Governance and also the select committee. I think it might not immediately appear here, but we have sent an invitation. I think we just sampled here. My apology. I think at the time we were preparing the presentation, I think we sent version one, and in version two, actually captured it.
Don't do that. We want to continue to believe you, so don't go there.
So we have invited the chair of the portfolio committee and also the select committee for for the national launch on the 23rd. And there will be about 82 venues nationally to conduct the Councillor Induction Program. And we have sought the assistance of specialist developers to ensure that the induction manual is more prepared in a more educational and informing way for councillors. So we have also prepared a facilitator's guide as an aid to the trainers in terms of the training methodology to make sure that there's a standardized presentation for all trainers across the board. The effectiveness and participation of the program, we have a national monitoring mechanism to make sure that we will be able to follow and monitor progress reports and also monitor the induction at all the venues. We will also conduct chairperson impact assessment immediately after the National Councillor Induction Program. It will also assist us in all provinces to gather quantitative data in terms of skills profiling for the new councillors that have come in so that we can have a much more measured intervention in terms of capacity building based on a skills profile across the sector. We have also broken down the program into a five-day national induction program, and then thereafter there will be portfolio-based programs. And portfolio-based program will respond to specific portfolios in municipalities. So there will be a dedicated training for municipal finance. So at MMCs for municipal finance and the portfolio committee or Section 80, as it is called in municipality, is also taken through municipal finance. There will be portfolio on infrastructure, portfolio on community services, and so on. That will take much more longer than the 5 days, in the sense that it will be modular based, and it might take at least a minimum of 4 to 6 months, as it will be more detailed. We have also, within the framework of the national induction, also created space on the last day for political parties to come to the induction session, where they would have specific venues for their own councillors and take them through their own envisage induction if they have. So the space has been created, and they will all be advised that on the last day of the session, should they want to explore that, they could then deal directly with their own councillors in that. So that would naturally relate to party-related induction to local government. In terms of our own readiness, Chairperson, in all provinces, this is just a breakdown of each of our provinces in terms of the number of venues and the number of trainers that have been identified and the target number of councillors. You will see that necessarily the ratios will not be the same. In other instances, trainers would appear small, but the target number is large. In other instances, trainers appear to be more relative to the target numbers. We were initially working on a ratio of 1:60, but on the availability, in other provinces, they would either, depending on the vastness and the number of venues, either would have decided that there will be one team that will then rotate all these areas. If you look at KwaZulu-Natal, 12 trainers, they have got quite a number of venues, 22. So all these 12 will rotate all the 22 venues as a block. Whereas in other cases, they would either say we are 15, but there's 3 venues in Eastern Cape, the Western region, Nelson Mandela Bay, or East London for the Central region, or Amkata for the Eastern region. So they will then split and go through the proposed dates. In other cases where they will be rotating, you will see that, for instance, in KwaZulu-Natal, it's almost like the whole month. It's because they will be rotating around those areas. In Limpopo, they have segmented it into 3 different times between the 27th of June and the 16th of July. In other areas, it's just 1 week forward to the 8th of July, and so on. In terms of further training, as I've indicated, once we have completed the impact assessment following our prior induction, we will then have this structured program in terms of a number of related programs that we run as SALGA. Executive leadership is one of those programs that is flagship within SALGA, and we have a key partnership with the University of Pretoria. That will also continue. The portfolio-based training in all these areas, as I've indicated, will also be done right through in the organization. So that's basically the detail of our state of readiness to launch the national induction program. The third element of the presentation, Chairperson, relates to the revenue enhancement model. All that seeks to say is about the funding model for SALGA. We have indicated previously, Chairperson, that since the establishment of SALGA, one of the fundamental weaknesses that exist in the Organized Local Government Act was the non-identification and clear spelling out of how the mandate of organized local government will be resourced. That has been one of the key weaknesses that has continued to undermine the work of the organization to effectively discharge its mandate. At the moment, it largely, as a body, relies on a voluntary scheme where members would from time to time contribute something. And the anomaly that visits the organization is that members from time to time will contribute, but you also subject the organization to a difficult situation where members, for whatever reason, they may choose not to contribute to SALGA for various reasons, and we have many of those examples year by year. Three related issues. One, members would plead poverty and indicate that we are unable to collect revenue. If we do not get equitable share, we are not in a position to execute our own municipal obligation. So to us, you are likely to be the last if we have to remit a levy subscription to you. Secondly, the second reason will be that we have paid this levy in the last financial year, but we think this year if you can reduce it, because we just can't afford. And if you can't reduce it, we will not pay you. So it also comes with the element of a shotgun. Agree first that you will reduce, and like any other organization, you work, even if you don't have to extend your budget, I mean increase your budget, naturally there will be inflation-driven factors that visit any budget, and so on. So we work in a tight environment. The third issue would be perhaps politically related reasons. We don't think that this body represents us. It represents that political party and so on. And most of the time, all of those reasons create a strain in the envisaged functioning of the organization. So this is one of the consistent issues that has visited SALGA for quite some time. Yet in terms of obligation, the constitution in the IGR system, you have to execute this obligation without a voluntary choice, and so on. So we have then, through that process, Chairperson, worked out a funding model that we think as SALGA needs to respond to this particular background factor. The challenges in terms of meeting our mandate, the need to exercise our mandate and demonstrate the relevance in terms of the stakeholders. All of this requires finances. The substantial reliance on unreliable stream, that is the subscription for municipalities, and also a mega grant allocation by COCT. The risk that also is associated with current funding may not be sustainable. In fact, it is not sustainable in the longer term, as I've indicated. And based on the current allocations that we have, just to take you back on that slide I jumped, these are the membership fees that we currently levy to municipalities, local, district, and metropolitan municipalities. And in all of these instances, they are even far less than if you were to compare 1% levies as a contribution to local government sector. It's 0.5, 0.6, and you always have to work within the parameters of the tension of increasing levies and the growth in members withdrawing their voluntary contribution. And it's one of the difficult tensions that SALGA at all times has always faced. We think that when we look at the issue of national fiscal allocation, the basis for that fiscal, we can't find any reference, Chairperson, as to why we allocated this amount in our fiscal, what informed that basis versus the mandate. Nothing could come out of those areas. So we then embarked on an exercise intensively for a year to define exactly what our activities are to give effect to our mandate. Which of those activities fall in the category and stream of mandated governance mandate? Which of those three streams are member-induced activities and so on? So in short, this overview, Chairperson, has broken down four related issues. The internal governance activities of SALGA, which is about servicing the members in terms of the functioning of the organization at the provincial level, the function of the organization at the national level. The second column relates to the participation in mandatory intergovernmental structures. All of these are legislated responsibilities of SALGA. We can't not to do these functions. The third one is providing services to members, the value-added dimension of our mandate around researching, advocacy, and local government issues, and also direct support to certain members. The fourth one is also a mandated responsibility in terms of the White Paper on Local Government, and also in the Organized Local Government Act, supporting the transformation and restructuring of the local government sector. So all of these four chambers define largely what we need to do in terms of our IGR responsibilities and also being an employer body in the sector. So based on this, Chairperson, we have then, out of those four chambers, went in detail on each of those. In the internal governance, this is what we have quantified, and we think all of these needs to be serviced by members themselves, because it is about structures of the organization, how it functions, how it executes its task. And we have quantified that at least there, as per the last 2 years figures, around 30 million to be able to execute this work. And also because we are a listed organization in terms of the public finance management requirements, we also have obligation in terms of corporate governance, your audit committee work, your organizational performance and remuneration work of the organization, and also being a subject of the audit, Public Audit Act, the role of the Auditor General. So all of these costs also get imposed as part of governance cost. And in our view, that these are the areas of the fund that we think members will be justified to be canvassed to continue to pay for these members. They are part of the constitutional obligations that members themselves have voted for. And if we retain that, you are able to manage the aspect of accountability much more direct for members, because they will define the parameters, they would approve the annual agenda, they would also subject SALGA to its own checks and balances and so on. We think that in terms of the grant financing, we will have to ensure that members continue to take a role in paying for those obligations. We also think that it's not a role that we can ask donors or sponsors to pay for. It's members themselves that must play that role. So in short, for internal governance matters, members of the organization will have to continue to pay for that. The second related one is the most difficult task, Chairperson, that is imposed on the organization, yet it is not funded adequately from the national fiscal. And it continues to grow every year. There's a piece of legislation passed. There are certain obligations which are very much necessary, but they also have this resource dimension to SALGA. The participation in IGR structures, the National Council of Provinces, that one is imposed in terms of Organized Local Government Act and also in terms of the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa. The Finance and Fiscal Commission, also an imposed obligation that we participate, we input and research positions before we go to these bodies. All of these also have major financial implications for us. The Budget Forum, which is a body of the Minister of Finance and MECs for Finance and SALGA, again, from time to time, we are required to lead and input for local government on major complex issues, local government tax review, fiscal review issues, reviewal of grant mechanisms and instruments for local government, and a whole range of factors that largely impact on the sector. So our presence is not the attendance. Our presence is influencing the positions, and behind that lies the need to have a much more resource research strength as an organization to be able to carry out proper mandates and research-informed perspective on many of those issues. The various structures like imposed by Intergovernmental Relations Framework Act, Presidential Coordinating Council. In the last meeting of the PCC, the President asked SALGA to come and lead an input on the job creation. What is the role of organized local government in influencing the sector to respond to the national job creation imperative? So we require a lot of capacity to be able to execute that. In every MINMEC, out of portfolio committees in Parliament, I'm not sure, maybe they are 27 or 34, especially those that we relate directly, again, it requires quite a lot of capacity for us to engage on these issues. And given the form that we are as local government, there is a particular framework within which we canvass mandates, pursue, lobby, and advocate before they become mandatory IGR structures. And they start with the lower bottom right part on the screen to make sure that we are able to carry out strong research. We pursue it within IGR structures of SALGA until it becomes a mandatory IGR position to be respected and taken through as a legitimate mandate. So all of that is followed by major cost drivers. Just sampling one instance of our participation in NCOP, we currently have a part-time attendance of 10 members. If we were to look at our proposal that we made earlier on, Chairperson, of 10 full-time members, we have quantified what it means to have 10 members every time there's a sitting at NCOP have to come down, or if they were to be here, and we're looking at the cost dimension at the time we undertake this exercise and quantify it directly, we're looking at around 15 million rand to be able to execute that task. If you look at other structures of IGR other than NCOP, again, these are the costs that we estimated. There might have been inflation affected by now, probably around 20 million. And we have gone through all this detailed engagement to make the point that most of these IGR have in fact major financial implications for the organization to effectively discharge its mandate. So in total, having looked at all of those, we have arrived at a conclusion in terms of our financial modeling, around 51 million at the time we did this exercise. And we are looking at possible financing of IGR structures, and we made the point that we are undertaking a lot of legislative functions. The extent and form of such participation effectively required in terms of legislation, a valid and justifiable argument for motivating for grant funding in this regard. We think that there's a valid justifiable argument. And in terms of the quantum of funding, we are suggesting various components, direct cash component, the cost of engaging, and also the perspective cost around ensuring that we have a much more strong capacity to reinforce the issues around that. In terms of the third component, the one of providing services to members, again, that's what Chairperson was saying, our funding model, that also plays a role. We are an employer representative body. We provide tangible services in terms of collective bargaining to members, and that becomes a value add to membership. Advocacy and research role, the transformation of local government. Some of these you are likely to, as informed by our own experience, for instance, issues of supporting transformation of local government, but putting credible arguments in the perspective of local government, you always find tension on those funds. Yet they accrue to members, indivisible. If you come to Parliament and represent the sector on amendment to legislation on a particular matter, most of the time members will always say, but why do we pay salga? What have you done for me as Municipality A? When in fact the majority of issues around transformation of local government, the advocacy issues and the employer role, it's decisions that impact across the sector. It becomes primarily very difficult to attach and say this one was in particular to response to you, Municipality B. So you always have difficulties and attention to motivate for increased membership to finance this issue. So it's one of those areas that we think that the funding model needs to assist us to respond in a particular way, given the fact that all of these, they accrue to the whole rather than individual municipality. The issues of use of SALGA officials in the main has been useful in the sense that throughout the country where there's been specific requests by municipalities and we do have capacity on that, we have been able to discharge that capacity, assist municipalities where they would need specifically people from SALGA, come and assist us at Msunduzi, we need an administrator, come and assist us in Mpumalanga, we need this, come and assist us on the representation on presiding matters on labor relations disputes, come and assist us on inducting our councillors on the role of speed, and so on and so on. So many of those issues requires a specific capacity strength within SALG. So we are saying, Chairperson, on the issue of membership, that one, there has to be services rendered to be relevant to members and perceived to be fundamental to the sector. Members to have a clear understanding of the services that they will receive and how this compares with the fees. That gives us advantages because they will be able to have a direct correlation between fees charged to members and services provided, but also you need to manage the tension of municipalities that are relatively wealthy, arguing against such a model in terms of cross-subsidization perception. The other difficulties around the voluntary contribution of members. Supporting transformation initiative, again, I've already detailed that one, Chair, in terms of one of it being the objective to support transformation for local government. And we have numerous examples over the last 10 years where we have played this role, but again, the funding to be able to engage on this matter becomes difficult. We can give anecdotal evidence on a number of key national initiatives where SALGA needs to partake and protect the interests of the sector, yet it doesn't have resources to be able to match the scale of the restructuring so driven. The risk becomes the unequal outcomes in terms of the impact to the sector. So So these are broadly the overview of all the policy initiatives that we play around emerging with a number of positions, around any legislative amendments on a particular matter, the required research that goes to it, engagement with Parliament, and the process growing through until such legislation is finally approved. So these are some of the scenarios that we're seeing in terms of policy initiation and in policy work that is undertaken. This is what we do. In terms of national engagement with departments around national transformation, we engage at a second dimension of commenting and making local government positions. So we are saying that members can be in a position to pay for this part of the work, and the disadvantages that go with it, given the elastic nature of the membership levy. The more you stretch it, the more you run a risk, because it's voluntary members withdrawing. So SALGA has really suffered quite a lot of stress around this matter for the purpose of executing its task. So in short, Chairperson, we are saying governance issues needs to be funded by members, direct services funded by members, they will be able to attach value, and checks and balances, lobbying and advocacy funded by members. But the following column on the right, mandatory governance requirement, legislated IGR participation, supporting and representing the interests of the sector in the national transformation. Here, we think that there is merit in the national fiscals providing a cost on that. When we look at the current funding of the organization, at the moment, Chairperson, all of those are not funded. The only component that we receive a grant for is in the form of the grant through COGTA, around 22 million. And I think it might have grown to inflation growth by now. The total increase that we required nationally, nine provinces and the National Office of SALGA, is a mere 79 million. But it would go a long way, Chairperson, if the funding allocation were to be allocated to be able to allow SALGA to discharge its responsibilities. Quite too often at the moment, given the fact that we are a listed organization, we have to play our role in the context of the Public Finance Management Act. You must have an annual performance plan, a five-year plan, a multi-year budgeting model, and come April 1, you must execute your responsibilities, present to Parliament, these are your commitments, and account for the previous year. But when it comes to the funding of the organization, when you start your financial year, you don't even have a cent to start the financial year, because you have to wait for July for members to decide to remit a levy or not remit a levy, because it is voluntary. So you've got this huge anomaly between imposed obligations and your resources. So when April 1 comes, SALGA does not have money to execute its responsibilities. And that's the reality. So we think that there is a need for a fundamental overhaul to be able to allow this organization to discharge its mandate. And so far, it has been crippled right through and has tried all different alternative avenues to pursue its objectives. Successful to a large extent, but very diminished from an impact given the resource capacity to execute its constitutional role. In short, Chairperson, we have proposed for the legislation to be reviewed to reflect the dynamic nature of organized local government, the full-time councillors to be able to discharge the overarching mandate for SALGA, the councillor induction program, and we are reporting that we have now much more aligned it to the requirements of organized local government, and there's a need for a funding model of SALGA to be reviewed, and the funding to be allocated for SALGA to perform its legislative functions. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much.
Members, there's a presentation. I'm going to suggest that we take a two-minute break, as usual, to take a breather. Secondly, to reflect on the presentation, buzz with your
little caucus there, so on, and then share that with us when we return. We will take your comments after the 2 minutes. Britha, caucus, and liquid balancing session. Yes, you said. Quick. Thank you very much. That's a very heavy presentation.
What was the criteria used to identify the 72 trainers? Why 72? Because during the presentation it appeared that with the 1 to 60 it's too much according to the time they've drafted on the programs and the dates when they were targeting to finish. And who are those 72? Are they ex-counselors or what? Just want to know who are those. And also, the presentation made mention of the Salva will provide tools of trade to incoming counselors. I just want to check in what form of those tools of trade. For an example, a laptop, a cell phone, or what, or office space, or what. Just want to know. And also, coming back to the launch, I know the CEO is coming to his conscience and doing presentation that he must invite the chairperson and the chairperson of the both committees, the portfolio committee and the select committee. But in our last meeting with Salda, we agreed that they will invite the whole component, the whole committee members. They need to go to us to check whether the chair must go or which members. So we've decided to include the chair only. Also, in our for us maybe to be able to know when doing our oversight and monitoring, to know what will be delivered during those workshops in provinces. And also in our last meeting, we agreed that you'll come here with those. You said you have already, with your expertise, prepared the counselor's induction manual and the facilitator's guide. We agree that we'll bring them here so that you'll be able maybe to add or to appreciate on your initiative, and also for us to be able to monitor the implementation of your programs, whether they're delivering the exact thing that you were saying, so that you'll also be informed. And also you said in KZN there were 12 trainers. I just want to check whether I've established a good working relationship with Ikwana local. We've got some municipality that belongs to Salga, which we are training, because they said you've trained 12 trainers to train KZN counselors. I just also want to get there. Let me add the last question. I'll come up in the second round. Thanks, Chair.
Next. Which order? When? Okay, let's go down, right down to the end, and then come. Yeah. Welcome, Peter Smith. We are privileged to have you in our midst.
I'm back.
We've been meeting here. Yeah, welcome back. Yeah.
deployed somewhere.
Nicking of wounds is another process. No. Just forget about the wounds, please.
Okay.
Just give me good spot. Be a good spot. Wendy.
Thanks, Jim. I'd like to see in some Salga's side, with your income check, what the percentage is of the grants from COGTA, what comes in from municipalities, and what comes in through donor funding. There is an indication for on. I think this is what is needed to carry out the mandate. But what happens when municipalities cannot pay their fees? Are programs then just sort of redesigned again? Or do you work on a deficit or what happens? A question that I asked Chairperson is the ELDP program with Executive Leadership Program, Development Program with University of Pretoria. I think it's overseen that program by David Forey. I know that UP informed students or people who counselors who did this program that they would be able to continue further study. But it seems that it is only at the University of Pretoria, because some of these things are not recognized by other universities. So is the intention that should counselors who have gone through this course, I forget what it's called, when you move on from one to you accumulate your credits and you move on. But it seems as if this is only at the University of Pretoria. But it's not what is really told to the participants of this course. So I'd like Salga to look at this and really come up very clearly that because huge amount of money is spent on training, we're aware of that, and it's necessary because counselors must be capacitated, but it must be in such a way that the training that is received can eventually lead towards some type of certification. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much. Thanks, Chair. A lot of my questions have been covered by Timmy. However, I'd like to expand on some of them. The induction manual that you have developed, it would have been nice to see that manual before you start presenting it and doing the training with the counselors. That's number one. Secondly, if you look at the training program of Kwan Loga, at the last meeting we were informed that issue has still not been resolved, yet we are training their counselors. So who's going to fund their counselors' training, their share of the training costs? Then further to that, the ratio that you're using, you said 50-50 counselors, 50% counselors and 50% officials. Who identified this 50-50? And who are these officials? And are the municipalities going to be releasing these people at whose cost to do the training? Because they are officials, they are not politicians. Further to that, the funding model for the full-time counselors that you put into your program. Where is this extra funding going to come from? Secondly, does it mean that you're talking about 10 full-time counselors? Where are these counselors going to come from? Is it going to be one per province? And where is the 10th one going to come from? And will it mean that they're going to have to relocate? Or are they going to be operating from somewhere else, which means that they will be incurring additional costs if they're not going to be operating? If it's full-time counselors, my understanding would be that they will be at head office and they will be operating all of them from there. If not, then what's happening to the relocation, not relocation, but the travelling expenses? And if there are, then what about the relocations and who's going to make sure that these are duly elected and not just appointed councillors? Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, another question about the councillors. I'd like a description of what has not been done that will now be done by these councillors. In other words, where's the failure been that we need to make up for with 10 full-time people? Some questions about the CIP. First of all, I'd like to know how we'll measure the impact of the training. I'd like to know why there's a need for a national launch. Surely this is something that you can launch in a memo. And how much is that going to cost? And then with regard to the budget of Felga, where can I see a breakdown of your meeting costs? I'm looking particularly at venue hire and entertainment. I'd like to know how many meetings this includes and how many people attended each meeting.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thanks for the presentation. It is really a huge presentation. Maybe to add, because most of my questions have been passed, but just to emphasize on the 72 trainers, how representative is it? When I'm saying how representative, I'm meaning how many from which each province. Then I think this is a food for thought to be seen that most often after each term or in the beginning of each term, we acknowledge that most of the councillors are new. Most it's not for the first time. Now I want to know, can't we come with a quota to be saying so much percent of continuity, not as individual people, but of continuity, like we are talking about 50% women, and that quota should be binding. Because at the end of the day, what we are saying, that is why we really need a lot of money, because on after every term, we have to start from scratch. Now, maybe the last one, and I think Honorable Whip has just touched it, the issue of induction. When I'm sitting here as Member of Parliament, among the most important function I am supposed to do is to oversight. Now, the councillors will have gone to an induction, and I should be coming to oversight or evaluate or monitor them on something I don't know. How can we be engaged so that we should be on the same wavelength with them and be able to really oversight them correctly? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I think I'm covered in most questions, because mine was a financial breakdown. But most of the members have covered.
Okay.
I'm fine. Thank you.
I know you always defer to Ngozi. It's
Sanko is progressive. Very progressive. And you have forgotten your own progressive directive that there must be caucus. That's why I knew that after the meeting, I'm next.
Okay.
Well, Chair, I think first of all, we must thank Salga for comprehensive presentation. And really, I think they have touched many issues. And from the presentation that has been given to this portfolio for years now, since 1999, privileged to receive one, I think it is really wonderful. It's really a very, very much improvement on their part. Four, I think, issues that I would like to raise. The first one, I hear the submission of review of legislation to give them, of course, powers. In other words, to give them at least something so that they can be full-time, etc., etc. But what I don't see and I didn't hear, is the legal implication of this full-time full-time role of the councillors at the IGR levels and COP. What's the legal implication? Firstly, on the Electoral Act, and clearly on the Constitution of the Republic, as well, of course, the municipal legislation, in particular the Structures Act. If they could just open up for us there so that we really understand whether there will be a need for any consequential amendment. Once I'm still there, if then there is an impact on Constitution, whether they have made any submission to the Constitutional Review Committee, for instance, that type of thing, and how far are they in that regard. So that is one. The second one, Chair, is on the induction program. I think the support is very, very good that anyone who's tasked to be elected, like all of us, if we're elected in Parliament, there must be some induction for a week or two, so that really we understand and we're really equipped. I think that's good. But here, I'm not so sure what is the role of the other sector in that council, namely 20% of traditional leaders. Because, you know, in terms of the Structures Act, which we have amended, I think it's section 812B, there's a provision that 20% of the councillors should be traditional leaders. I don't see, gain a sense whether they are in any way part of this induction, because it's very, very crucial. If then they will be part of this, they are capacitated in one way or another. I didn't hear anything around that. I would like to hear. Bearing in mind, Chair, again, that I think Salga did a report to us some years ago, which is very laudable, that there's an MOU with the National House of Traditional Leaders, for instance, around this. As we all know, it is key the traditional councils and the municipal councils to work together for service delivery, especially in traditional communities, that type of thing. So there is a need then around that. Again, incidental to that, Chair, is the question of the local government leader role here. Where does it feature in this? Because I think there must be some role, whether they will come later on or whatever. I would like to hear something about that. The other one, Chair, that I think issue is the question of the numbers. I see on slide 15, for instance, Chair, myself and my fellow colleague from the Eastern Cape, I don't think that it is comforting. For instance, a number of venues in the Eastern Cape are 3. The number of the people, targeted numbers, 1,661 on slide 15, and then compare that with, with KZN, although KZN is slightly more, but definitely Limpopo is less in terms of target number than the Eastern Cape. Yet, in Limpopo, there are 16 venues. Yet, in the Eastern Cape, only 3. So if then they could actually just explain that so that we really understand, I would really appreciate. I'm comparing the Limpopo and the Eastern Cape because they are all rural provinces, as it were. And of course, KwaZulu-Natal and Eastern Cape. I think in terms of the number of municipalities, yes, KZN have many, but Eastern Cape also does follow. And yet you see the Western Cape that is really much more urban and then concentrated, having more these centers. Again, I couldn't understand when I was reading that, that this must have been there. The last one, Chair, it's good to induct these councillors. I'm not so sure. What is the role of SALCA vis-a-vis the key component of local government, that is municipal managers themselves, the administration? Yes, you may find that some of the administration, the municipal managers, there's the term and 1657 managers, term and something like that. But if they could just indicate whether training, therefore, and therefore induction around that, around those who are new, because in some of the municipalities, the new political bodies have emerged clearly with the implication that municipal managers may not get renewal, as others will get, but nevertheless, anyway, administration and political authority are the same. It's very crucial that when there's some induction, at least there's some understanding on both. That is the political component and the administration. If then Samuel can just share with us all that issue, I'll appreciate it. Chair, thank you very much. That's all.
Thank you very much. What a question.
You're always ready. Any questions? Comments?
No, I'm listening. It's my induction.
Free of charge from the committee. Okay, thank you very much. Honourable Councillor Johnson and Honourable George, we would like to invite ourselves to your September meeting as the committee. Yes, we invite you. We propose to come there, not just to listen, but we would like to come there to welcome our fellow public representatives formally and to communicate a message to them about what we think our relationship is going to be, should be, and what challenges it might face. So that's the message, the part of the message that we would like to convey, to talk about as public representatives what challenges we are going to face. We are kind of them. That's the first point I thought I should make. We invite ourselves to your meeting in September. The second part is a question about, I sat in a forum where the, and it's linked to the Nkosi Nonganyane's question about the local government seat, which now falls under higher education. Talking about as part of the country's long-term human resource development strategy, that they would consult local government. So this is what we understood when they did that presentation. And so we wanted to understand, I want to understand from you, in the scheme of things that you are outlining here, what role are they playing? It's naturally linked to that thing. In the part of its motivation is also what Wendy was asking, Honorable Nelson, about the quality, let me put it crudely, usefulness of university-provided counselor education programs and their relevance. And how is that being factored in our medium to long-term strategy, including whether there is any short-term progress that SALGA has negotiated with its institutions of higher learning and the department, so in the dental pathway and so on. The other one is, it's been asked, this year is 2011. This is the year on which Kwanologa proposed and SALGA agreed they would return to the fold. What program is underway to do that? So that the question that members were asking are answered in line with their issue. The costs. What I liked about the presentation is the divisions you have introduced, the different parts of the presentation that addresses very specific issues. And this one about your funding overall is an interesting one. How you continue to chip at it. I associate myself with Nkosi Mongwanyana's observation of the improvement of your presentation. The improvement is particularly in the way you've divided this thing this way and motivated in the way you've done. You haven't done that before. Okay. Yes, you had met last. You've always, done this with slogans. Very good sounding slogans. Now we are seeing some homework has been done. So we just have to congratulate you for that. But also, it is a convincing one. You see, as members of parliament ourselves, members, to raise this question, we are supposed to be asking questions of the, what are the financial implications of requiring SALGA to participate in this thing? In the passing of legislation, in the interaction with COCTA, and so on. So what are the, we accepted this as part of the guidance in the oversight responsibility we have over departments and the legislation that we pass, including the understood intergovernmental relations and so on. So what are the financial implications of that? So when we don't ask that question, and yet people are expected to participate, the consequences of it is that we are also contributing by default to the financial throttling of those institutions. We say they must do more with less, when the less hardly goes anywhere near meeting the requirements of those obligations that we have given them. So there's an objective case to be made for that. I'm just saying from where I'm sitting, I can see what it means in practice. If you say the FFC, you can't conclude your decisions without hearing SALGA. Okay? Now, how does FFC do that? Do they pay for them to come there? Or the Minister of Finance, Pravin Gordhan, does he pay to ensure that SALGA comes to the budget forum? How do they expect them to come there? You know, the question we're asking about the venues, for example, is an interesting one. That those who have decided to spread it think they'll have enough money to be able to do that. Those who have not may have done so because they don't have money to spread it thinner to more parts of the province, for example, to have, let's say, to have in every district, ideally, you have intense work for 5 days. In each of those districts, okay? That would be financially huge. So if we choose, let me speak like that, in the Free State, we have one venue for 5 days, all of them, what it means is likely that the cost might be less than if we spread them and the way we're doing it. So there are financial consequences for some of those questions. But what is legitimate also, what I would have loved to have heard from you is to identify the arguments against some of the proposals that you are making and your response to those arguments. So we in your in doing your work in preparing yourself, I would have expected you to have said to us, we realize that when we raise these issues, Treasury and COCTA, for example, have raised the following things about us as Salga, and this is our response to that, to you, in advance. So I haven't heard that from where I'm sitting. So that would be very helpful to us, because it then shortens the distance between us in considering the issues that you're raising. We now hear your understanding of what COCTA and Treasury and any other role players might be raising against your proposals, and your readiness with counter-arguments to continue to substantiate what you're proposing. That would be very helpful, in my opinion, in the processes of doing so. So if you have any of those, it would be useful just to marshal them and then present them to us. I also think that the question about your proposed let me put it this way, the question Gosin Wayne asked about the legal consequences on what we are suggesting. You see, when we were dealing with the Local Government Laws Amendment Act, there was a clause which we rejected in this bill that dealt with ward committees and the way in which the department then proposed to deal with it. I have a sense to hear an echo in your proposal currently, and I want to hear what the legal implications are for your proposal, for the amendments you are suggesting, whether there is any, or you have a different view and so on. So that would be helpful to hear from you. In the list of things that you identified there, I didn't count them, but look to me like the 10-point plan of the agenda for induction, something like a 10-point plan. You do make reference to cooperative governance, but that's a separate concept to me, but it is an important one and is related to what I'm pointing out. The relationships, and this is going to be part of the message that we will communicate to your members, the members assembly. That part of the induction, including the relationship that councillors in their individual and collective should nurture and nurse and cultivate for the successful execution of their work. That's a huge area, and it's fraught with difficulties, and if managed, and as usually, if it's not managed well, produces very bad results for entire not only for the country itself, but for the community under their jurisdiction. So this question of the relationships is one that I thought it's a very important one. We will talk to it anyway as our message. I just wanted to identify it as one of those things that needs our attention. Let me go towards the last and concluding point here. I think your presentation to us of the costing exercise you've done here, at least presenting your assessment of what it would cost to do so, is another useful one. It recognizes for us to have a sense of what the cost will be and so on. And like every lobbyist, every advocacy, you couldn't resist the temptation to call your 79 million merely 79 million. 79. I guess in the context of people talking about billions, it is really merely. I just noticed it as a very interesting way to be considered small changes. I don't know whether Treasury will agree with you. you've done. I'm just saying that it's a useful one. There are questions members are asking, that's additional at least. It's not like if you didn't do that, that would have been the first question. That was already forming in my head as we were going along with your presentation. I wondered whether you have costing, and I find it useful, that example. Okay. Go for it. Give us some responses, initial ones, and then we can see if there are additional responses here. Councillor Johnson.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, our view was to present today and also to get a soundboard from yourself as one of the architects of our local government dispensation, together with the Deputy Minister, which we were indicated that he was going to be here. Because the whole process of reviewing our current system of local government through the white paper on provincial and local government review process is a high priority in going to 2012 for the government governing party, but in particular also that we can impact on the debates and discussions on that. But it's critical for us that we have identified some salient features of bridging the divide and maybe the artificial lines that were drawn when we define that our system of government is autonomous, interdependent, interrelated spheres of government. But central to our constitution is the unitary nature of what we are doing. And there is only one word, autonomous, which is better defined in terms of specific legislative competencies, whether it's bylaws, vis-à-vis supporting, you know, bylaws of applicable to a specific region. There are also moral hazards within which you have clearly identified as saying that institutions should consult, the whole question of participatory democracy, and so forth. And in particularly, my view on the question of our institution of governance, when we refer to the role of course, Chairperson through you, the role of traditional leaders, they belong to two different houses in the local government and in the House of Traditional Leaders. So there is not an inconsistent practice related to representation that you are in fact a member of two different houses as we currently have. Yes, we are discussing the issue of the role of traditional leaders intensely, and position papers will be developed related to it, particularly the building of social cohesion, the issue of spatial planning issues pertaining to traditional affairs, which is another matter that is still unfinished business with the presidency as far as the Land Use Management Act is concerned. I think that it's important for us that when we have created these institutions, and when we have looked at the question of the MOU, the representation, and within the different district municipalities, that it's been attended to. I'm of the view that that if we look at the extension of the, in my opening remarks, I referred to our conference, and we are part of that committee organizing the conference. So I can assure you that the portfolio committee is part of the VIP list of people to attend it. We haven't, we had our first meeting to finalize preparations last week. I can provide
a list as well. We are very explicit. Speaking list as well. VIP, yes. Speaking list as well. In the program.
This is what we are requesting to do. I will submit it to the committee because we have a we try to make it an interactive meeting, but you if you look at the number of ministers, and this is the maybe our South African protocol, if the president is there and all the ministers are sitting there, now once the president is speaking, then nobody else can address the plenary. And this is when we send our invitation to find the fit within the various, within the program, I will convey the meeting that you've requested a speaking term. Chairperson, then if we look at the building of social capital that you've referred to with our university as well as the Honourable Nelson's role, question. We try to build social capital as municipalities with our universities. And you've noticed that in certain instances there are only three venues. If I'm from Smarty Town or Bontheville or Machombeni, and I'm going for the first time to the university to be trained, it is a mental issue that for the first time I become a graduate at last through democracy. So I'm of the view that in some of the provinces we have formal agreements between the University of the Transkei. That is why you only have as a training as a facilitator, as well as with the University of the Western Cape and with the University of Pretoria. I think in KwaZulu-Natal there is also formal agreement to utilize those institutions based on the content of the subject matter. And that is why you will find in some of the provinces fewer venues than what we have listed. The Northern Cape hasn't got any tertiary institutions, so that's a given. Then on some of the other matters that were raised, I attended the trained the trainers last week, and I can assure you we can deliver to you the handbook that was prepared. We are attending to the reworking. But what is important to note here is that if we are going to have training for adults and new first-time counselors, and we're going to make it academic, as the CEO indicated, according to so-and-so and according to this and that, then we're going to lose those counselors. We must have a combination of practice and theory. And therefore, we'll have trained former counselors, current serving counselors, portion of them are first-time counselors even that are getting trained with previous training abilities, where they either in terms of their profile and officials. Because if you are going to say, why do we, in terms of the local government review process, there's a problem with the troika, the speaker, the mayor, and the municipal manager. What, you know, how did you resolve it? There are things with the local government that is not legislated, but is part of institutional culture in terms of the way the legislator, the executive, and the administrative convene from time to time to look, for instance, at the performance of the institution or to have oversight on the entire institution. So I'm of the view that if one starts reflecting on that, or how did you deal with issues of illegal occupation of land, then it's the councillors who are working with the communities who actually sometimes come from Sanko or who are newly elected councillors or who have been right at the forefront of resolving issues related to them. I think that the question on oversight role, we are going to emphasize it, especially to find the legislative tools that have been the performance management system. The performance management system for councils, for public representatives on organizational issues as a party representative. That is why we brought in political parties. What will be the oversight role of political parties on their public representatives? What will be the compliance issues required from a councillor or from a public representative? And what is the oversight on implementation? Those will be the three key areas which will be the role of political parties to drive the new breed of councillors that we would like to see being in place. Jefferson, I'm of the view that it could be also useful for the other spheres of government when we have to look at the question of the induction and the redefining of local government for the next 5 years. If we look at the first question on the which is a consequence of sometimes Salga's non-participation in IGR structures, I think I had to apologize on behalf of the chairperson. How many times did we have to come here to apologize on behalf of the chairperson? But there are 10 directly elected councillors as per the Salga constitution. And it is required from those 10 directly elected councillors to represent Salga, especially when they are members of portfolio of working committees, to represent in Salga at at parliamental and so forth. But one must also recognize the fact that some of our elected members are either mayors of cities, who is in charge of budgets of even an extent of what the provincial budgets are. And this is causing a major issue as part of performing the functions in terms of intergovernmental relations, which requires that the dilemma that was spelled out by the administration. If we look at what will they will, you know, the question was asked, what will they do? The 10 councillors as provided in the constitution. The chairperson of the NCOP said, put before us proposals with regard to what we view their task will be. And this is what we are currently working at, to say that how do you bridge that gap in terms of representation in intergovernmental relations structures? But also, how do you ensure that the way matters get processed from local government, whether it's flowing from oversight throughout government, that you only find it being pulled together at a national level? There are clusters working at national level, and sometimes those clusters don't even exist at local level in terms of which is prescribed by the Intergovernmental Relations Act, security cluster or basic services and so forth. It's not there. Although the legislation provides for those kind of clusters that should improve intergovernmental relations. And we do believe that it will bridge the divide. Jefferson, I think that I will hand over to the CEO now to comment particularly on matters related to criteria, selection process, etc. of the CIP and other matters. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Jefferson. On the first issue of the trainers. We call them train the trainers, and the total is 172. So it's not 72, it's 172. And we're working on the ratio of 1:60 in terms of the 9,088 counselors. And we have asked provinces to give us the people who will be available and also eligible to provide the training program. And we have given them a criteria of saying a balance of 50% should be people who have been in those particular roles, either counselors or members of the executive in a council, or office bearers, whether you were a former speaker or a mayor and so on. But we also did not exclude the serving counselors in terms of continuity. So the principal point was the balance of exposure in terms of having been on the trenches. At the same time, we've also identified municipal officials who are currently serving, who would then be released by their municipalities on those specific days. It's really about 5 days, as we said. So those that have been in the training field and are also familiar with the mechanics of specific issues, performance management, IDPs, budgeting, and so on, have also been factored into this balance of 50-50 in terms of representation. We have not specified any issuing of tools of trade for councillors. The tools of trade is dealt with in terms of the separate engagement that we have for councillors in terms of the remuneration of public office bearers. So it's a separate reference altogether in terms of tools of trade for councillors. So these ones will be trained, they will be provided with the orientation and so on. But it's really to say we want to equip them with the tools of analysis to engage with all the issues that relate to governing and managing municipalities. The launch of the CIP, Chairperson, we sent the invitation on the 14th of June. And we are awaiting a response from that in terms of both committees, the Select Committee and also the Portfolio Committee on CROCTA, this committee chairperson. To the chairperson of both committees, of Select Committee as well as the chairperson of CROCTA Portfolio Committee, the copy of the induction manual and the facilitator's guide, chairperson, I think it was just a logistical problem on our side. We did prepare to bring those ones, and they will be here at any minute from now, from our office. So we will make them available to the committee. The Kwanaloga dynamic, chairperson, as you have referred to, and also Honorable Tlengeto, there is an arrangement that was communicated by the National Executive Committee of SALGA that in 2011, Kwanaloga would have to be fully integrated back to SALGA. And one of the reasons that the National Executive Committee of SALGA chose KwaZulu-Natal as a hosting province where we will convene the National Conference of Local Government is precisely to build that interface, because all provinces will have to convene provincial conferences prior to the September conference. So we will get a sense, Chairperson, once they convene in August in terms of resolutions that should reflect this particular agreed framework. But for purposes of this training program, we have not, as SALGA, sought to move in that perspective of saying they are outside SALGA. We looked at it in the interest of all councillors that must be prepared throughout the country. Regardless of the current problem that we have reported to the committee on numerous occasions. So yes, the trainers of KwaZulu-Natal have been trained, and then there will be a program of a rollout in that province for for councillor induction, and it will be funded nationally in terms of all other provinces. But that process is being managed, Chair, so we all remain optimistic that possibly beyond September there might be clarity in terms of reintegration or otherwise. It's one of those issues, Chair, that we're saying earlier on in the review of organized local government. We need to press very hard for this imperative of a unified model of the system of local government, so that going forward you don't run the risk of these challenges emerging from time to time, primarily because the model itself is vulnerable. It is a voluntary model and so on, and not in standing with the unitary character of the South African state. The grant from COCTA in terms of what are the ratios and contribution, there are two components in this grant. There is a grant we receive from the National Fiscus, the conduit being COCTA, and the voluntary levies from municipalities. So the percentage component of the COCTA is around 11% as per our current budget. And the voluntary contribution balance is the one of municipalities. Ideally, with the refined funding model, Chairperson, we have now made a business case that there is quite a number of legislated mandates for local government, which we think that